Welcome to AI Snacks with Romy and Robby, a new podcast for AI muggles, not wizards. Last year, it was 2023, in May, I ran into someone who is a leader with an AI education organization. She wanted to recruit me for a conference. So she asked about my experience, and I told her that I wrote tons about AI and talked about this technology family in front of governments, for-profit and non-profit organizations such as the United Nations, Google, McKinsey, Columbia University, women corporate directors, and Dun & Bradstreet. I told her as well that I wanted to write a book series to educate children and their families about AI and robotics. And so she asked me, do you use ChatGPT to write your books? Frankly, I was quite confused. Of course not, I responded. I tried to explain to her that ChatGPTs and its cousins are flawed, and every large language model requires a lot of training and context to truly work for any user. So she looked at me as if I was crazy. I never heard from her again. My name is Anastasia, and I have spent 30 years in companies such as Munich Re, Daimler, Deutsche Telekom, T-Mobile International, Qualcomm, and McKinsey. I'm an educator as well. I taught AI, cybersecurity, and AI ethics in Potsdam and Innsbruck. I educated countless students and adults about the benefits, implementation hurdles, and advantages of AI. And now I'm on a new mission. I want to demystify AI and democratize knowledge about this technology. I understand it sounds pretty grand. My book series about Romy and Robby, a British short-haired cat and his android friend, is full with technology. Those two love their family and go on adventures. Hello, big boys, ladies and gentlemen, and everyone interested in the world of AI and robotics. I am Anastasia, and I am bringing you AI Snacks with Romy and Robby, a weekly podcast explaining the world of technology to AI muggles, not wizards. I want to prepare you for conversations with your families, friends, and peers at work. Together, we can democratize the knowledge of AI and robotics and make the use of those technology enjoyable and friendly for everyone. I'm launching this podcast while interviewing James Ashton, a wonderful journalist and writer who authored a book called The Everything Blueprint. This book is about a very important technology called microprocessors or semiconductors. The teeny tiny microprocessors power all the devices around us, from our cars to our dishwashers, from smartphones in our pockets to desk PCs which sit in our schools or at our homes. So let technology get revealed and our explanations start. You might hear some music playing, and this is my daughter, Catherine, a 14 years old, performing Gershwin Summertime Variation in the interpretation of Fazil Say. Fazil Say is a Turkish pianist. And of course, we respected all the copyrights and paid for the licensing agreement. So James, welcome to the podcast. It's really great that you had patience and actually waited till I could sort out the Wi-Fi problem. Would you mind to introduce yourself and tell us how did you come to this topic, semiconductors or chipset technologies, and what made you to write the book, The Everything Blueprint?
Hi, it's great to be talking to you today, Anastasia, and glad the technology is working. As you said, my background is in financial journalism. I've worked for a number of UK newspapers over several years, always covering business, finance, the economy, technology, leadership. And in the last few years, I've done a few books on different subjects, and I was really looking for, I suppose I was driven not primarily by the technology, but I was looking for, because I'm based in the UK, what is the biggest British business story that's not being well told. And I prefer corporate stories to sort of the macro and really the company arm that you reference, which is a designer, a microchip designer, is a fairly young UK company. It's still 34 years old now. And it's very global and it's very high tech. And I thought I knew a bit about it. I'd written about it at different newspapers, including the Sunday Times. And I thought, how can I get my arms around this topic? Why is this company so indispensable in the semiconductor supply chain? And who knew that I would have to read and understand an awful lot about tech, about semiconductors and so on, in order to be able to tell this story? But it has been fascinating.
That's great. But before we go into the rabbit hole of the arm, could you maybe give us a very simple definition? What does it mean, a chipset or a semiconductor? And obviously, my audience doesn't have any engineering, computing or AI background.
Well, I think there's a number of, I think this industry, first of all, it's great that you're demystifying it, because there are a lot of terms here for items that are very, very similar, whether that's a chipset, you know, a semiconductor or whatever. Essentially, you are talking about a small device. I like to think of them as controllers for modern life. They are tiny slivers of typically silicon on which you have billions of transistors packed. Transistor, you know, a tiny switch that flicks on and off to control the flow of electrons. It flicks, you know, billions of times every second. What does the chip do? Essentially, it is that controller. It is the method by which software, essentially the computer programs that we write, controls a piece of hardware, whether that's a PC, a mobile phone, a car, and increasingly, you know, every device in modern life. As so many devices have gone from dumb to smart over the last couple of decades. I mean, probably your toothbrush, probably your fridge, certainly your car. So really, chips everywhere.
And what is the difference between designing the chipsets and manufacturing them?
Well, I mean, a huge amount. I think what's happened in this industry is we assume that you see this tiny device at the end of the production process, and that is something that's been produced by one company that operates in a vertical. So it sources the materials, it designs, and it manufactures and so on. What's been a particular hallmark of the chip industry over the last 60 years or so, when we go back to the real breakthrough of what was called the integrated circuit, getting all those pieces on a single sliver of silicon, is that this is incredibly capital intensive. Hundreds of billions of dollars have been expended on developing and advancing this technology. And one of the ways that is most visible is the concentration of transistors that you're getting on the chip, which increases exponentially over time, which means they can do more. They have greater capabilities. The fact that this industry is so difficult and so expensive means that so many of these stages have splintered. So you have very, very few, if any, companies that do everything anymore. What you do have is effectively a series of monopolies, a series of real specialists. So a company like Arm, which was set up in 1990 in Cambridge in the UK, think of it as a designer of floor plans, if you like. So in order to get more components, more transistors packed onto a chip, if you can't get everything in on the ground floor, you start building up. And these tiny, tiny chips are really tiny skyscrapers these days. You will have 100 or 150 or even more layers of transistors stacked on top of each other. If you're building something that intricate and that small, you need someone to help you with the floor plan. And what Arm has done over many, many years, it has this blueprint. It helps to arrange the transistors on the chip. It's a kind of an off-the-shelf design that people can buy. Every time an Arm design is sold, it gets a few cents, really not a lot more. The fact that it's selling its designs 1,000 times a second gives you an idea that this is a decent business. So where is the manufacture taking place? Well, look east, look to Taiwan, look to Korea, companies like TSMC and Samsung. They have these fantastic semiconductor factories. They're called fabs, fabrication plants. If you want to build a fab, again, this demonstrates how expensive this industry is. You won't get much change these days out of $20 billion. They are huge factories the size of many football pitches. And their specialism, the likes of TSMC, is that real efficiency of the conveyor belts going round effectively, the production plant and so on. So this is why these things have got sliced up over time.
So you mentioned Asia and Arm sits in Europe. There were a couple of regulatory movements to bring the production to the United States and to Europe. Do you have a lot of hopes that those movements will succeed?
I think what happened, it's interesting that this industry got an awful lot of focus through and post the COVID lockdown. And what you saw in COVID, there was a real realization among politicians, among businesses and so on, about the importance of the semiconductor supply chain. And the example I give in the book is everybody wanted to get their PS5, the newest PlayStation console. I think it was Thanksgiving 2021 or whatever. Sony couldn't keep up. There was shutdowns and there were shortages. But for, I think, a chip that probably cost about $1, people were queuing around the block in the US. They couldn't get hold of this device. Now, games consoles is fine, but if you think you have these components at the heart of pretty much every device that's being made now, governments across the world realized that they all needed what you might call some silicon sovereignty. So there have been moves in Europe, and there's big investment, I think, going into a region that will be called Silicon Junction, I think, in Germany, and also moves in the US to bring back manufacturing from Asia. Why did manufacturing go to Asia in the first place? Because initially it was cheaper, and then latterly, the companies like TSMC and Samsung were just better at it. And better means that you get, you know, greater outputs from the production line, and it's cheaper all round. So I think it can go back to some of these other territories. It doesn't necessarily mean that the devices keep getting cheaper, though. The most efficient place to run all of this is probably somewhere like Taiwan or Korea. But yes, I think over time you can see that more of these plants will be all around the world. I think between 2020 to 2030, there's something like a 50% uplift in chip capacity. So that shortage in COVID doesn't exist anymore. And probably by 2030, we'll be facing a glut once again. This is very much a boom and bust type industry.
That's very interesting. I hear from TSMC that there are issues with the education of the blue-collar workers in the United States, because obviously it takes a lot of time to school people who are working on those factory floors, and making a chipset is something different than making, let's say, a pumpkin latte in Starbucks. So how do you see this issue around blue-collar workers working in the chipset industry in Europe?
I think the biggest problem for TSMC is the balance has changed. I mean, the first reason that so much of this chip production and transistor production, which was putting devices into transistor radios initially, went to Asia was because they were very, very labor intensive. So actually the cost of personnel was a key issue. And it still is a key issue, but it's more skills than cost these days. The problem TSMC has got is it doesn't want to pay American wages. So there is a tension there. And yeah, I think there also is something about training people up and finding the interest in the workforce, whether that's US or Germany. But certainly TSMC is not a familiar, well-known brand in the US. I mean, if you're going to work for Intel, then it's probably an easier sell. But I think currently there is that mismatch between skills, obviously, but certainly salaries is an issue. And I guess that's going to be the same in Europe.
Absolutely so. But if we go back to Arm, why is this company so interesting today? And what is happening with the company?
I talked about the monopolies along the supply chain. And I think there's two or three that really stand out. And I've mentioned TSMC. TSMC is producing about 9 in 10 of the most advanced level of chips in the world. It's absolutely indispensable. It is one of the reasons that the US and China are butting heads over Taiwan, let's say. I think another one, which is based in the Netherlands, is called ASML. They make lithography machines. They make these giant machines. They're the size of a small bus, and they help to effectively, they imprint the chip design on the chip. They took 20 years to develop and more. They cost about 150 million euros per machine. ASML has been selling them for several years. It can't keep up with demand. No one else can make these most advanced machines like they do. And I put ARM in the same category because we're at the point now where almost every chip in the world that's designed contains elements of the ARM rulebook. It's called the instruction set architecture. Essentially, it's the Ten Commandments of how a language, you know, so to speak. So I think ARM has really come up over time, and it's got that critical mass now. So as I say, it's selling about 1,000 devices a second are sold with its designs in. And I think what we see now is there is an acceleration going on. It's in almost every smartphone that's sold. It's in an awful lot of PCs, and there are growth areas such as data centers and cars that it has ahead of it. The company is still controlled by SoftBank, the Japanese investment house, and it floated its shares on NASDAQ last September, in September 2023, and on the back of hopes for huge growth in AI, its shares have responded incredibly well on NASDAQ. But what the company is saying is, look, you know, we have got, you know, growth ahead. We're entering into a new era. We see other devices becoming almost like, if you can use the word, libraryized. I've just made that up. But if you think how a phone went from being a pretty simple device into essentially a central point that controlled a library of applications, we see the same things happening in other devices. You know, perhaps the controls for a fridge, certainly the controls for a car, which essentially over the next decade or so will become essentially becoming computers on wheels. So ARM is talking about growth in automotive. It's talking about growth in data centers. And clearly it's talking about what could happen next in artificial intelligence, where there is a real, you know, demand for the horsepower, I suppose, that's needed to control these large language models. And the shares have done incredibly well. They've really ramped up since the IPO on the hope that ARM can deliver on its AI potential. And the debate has been, ARM specializes in CPUs, the computer processing unit, which is kind of the, I always think of it as the brains of the outfit within any device. And actually the type of device which is seen as being the primary beneficiary of the AI revolution is the GPU, which is the graphics processing unit, which is a particular preserve of a company called Nvidia that has had an incredible journey on the stock market in the last couple of years. And there are key differences, if it's worth going into those. The CPU in particular is very good at doing things in order. It breaks down instructions. It deals with them one by one in almost a pipeline. A GPU, which, as it sounds, comes out of the early computer graphics industry, is very good at doing lots of little things all at once. And in order to succeed in AI, these large programs that are chewing through huge volumes of data need to be able to look at all the pieces of data at the same time. It's very much, and this is where it comes from, it's very much like, think of a huge screen that has a lot of pixels making up a graphic, and every pixel needs to be in the right place and it needs to be sharp at the same time. And so that's why the GPU has prospered so well, because of the prospect of AI. And I think what ARM has done has shown that it is operating in AI. It is not known as being the GPU specialist, but I think the fact that AI will massively increase the volume of chips and presents a real opportunity for the whole industry, ARM with its designs should be a beneficiary too. At least that's what the investors think now.
Well, I mean, the jury is still out, because we can't really judge whether in 10 years from now, graphic processing units will still be as powerful as they are today, given what kind of architecture we will see in AI and robotics 10 years from now. But NVIDIA, obviously, is a very powerful example for success, because the company is valued over $1 trillion US dollars. So congratulations, NVIDIA. James, I am really very grateful for your time. Here's your book, so I'm showing this to the audience. Where can we follow your work and what kind of social platforms are you?
Yeah, I use LinkedIn most of all, but also at Mr. James Ashton on Twitter. And yeah, the book is available globally. There's an audio edition. I've just signed off the cover for the Polish edition and is going into Taiwan in a month's time.
James, that was wonderful. Thank you. I will include all your information in the show notes. For my listeners, James' book is available on Amazon and Thalia online stores. And now it's time for a very special treat. I have invited Susan Ford, a British actress and a voice coach, to the studio. Susan has kindly agreed to work with me on the audiobooks for Romy and Robbie. Let's hear what Romy and Robbie have to say about chipsets.
Software and hardware to build robots. We're at the very beginning of the book. Robbie arrives at a lovely house in Newmarket, a village close to the Alps. This podcast handles basic definitions of software, hardware, and semiconductors. These terms are important to understand when you're interested in robotics. And while Robbie snoozed happily, Mum's bag started to show signs of life. Something lilac and yellow glowed inside it. First a scratchy, and then a rather melodic sound came out, as if a voice recorder had been turned on. The bag moved. Something or someone moved inside it. Romy opened one orange eye. A creature was crawling out of the bag. It had a white plastic and metallic body. Several built-in lamps were glowing on what could have been taken for a head. The thing seemed unstable and disoriented. Romy opened both eyes and sniffed. The creature stopped moving, but its head turns towards the cat. "What are you?" asked Romy, unamused. "I am Android," answered the creature. Both went silent and looked at each other. Romy considered for half a minute, approaching the creature to test its smell. But he still hadn't had any breakfast. A clever cat always goes into energy-saving mode. "You are a cat." Android's voice seemed close to happy. "We used your images to train how to see." "What are you talking about?" wondered Romy. But he didn't speak it out loud. Instead, he asked, "Have you got food?" The creature's eyes glowed brightly. "I don't have any food, but 8 cans of cat food are in this room. I can open one for you." "Cool." Romy considered learning how Android came up with the information. But chicken pate with salmon flooded his imagination. Nothing else counted. He wanted his breakfast. Android crouched towards the bench, his arm extended, and pulled the box from under the seat. Apparently, he identified the place Mum stored the magical cans. He secured the one on top of the stack. "I would care for chicken and salmon, please," mentioned Romy. He was a very polite cat when it came to food. "I can't read labels. Not yet, anyway," sighed Android. "I haven't been trained yet." "Can I train you?" suggested Romy. "That would be an honour." An opening fork came out of his arm, and a second later, Romeo was pressing his nose into the meat. "Duck," he murmured, disappointed. Enthusiasm left him as he took a couple more bites. "She never knows what I like to eat," Romy said bitterly. Of course my taste fluctuates, but in summer I like salmon. According to the magazine Savoir Vivre, salmon is high in omega-3 fatty acids. They are good for skin, hair and longevity. Android's eyes grew even more yellow. Is Android your first or last name? Asked Romy. He was impressed by the creature's knowledge of nutrition. I guess this is how we label my kind, answered Android. I am a robot, you see, a humanoid robot. Robots are machines. Humans need to know hardware and software to build us. Romy felt he had received too much information. Hard what? Soft what? Hardware is what you see. My body, the cables built in, the batteries and chipsets inside. Romy was surprised. So humans organise potato chips into sets and push these inside someone like you. Potato chips are fast food product with zero nutritional value. Overconsumption can lead to obesity and even cancer, said Android. So why do humans put these inside you? Chipsets is a common name for groups of semiconductors or microprocessors. A technology that makes all electronic devices like phones, computers or cars work. Are you similar to a phone then? Wondered Romy. He knew these flat things, which the girl couldn't live without. Mum managed to misplace hers 4 times a day. More or less, answered Android. I am a robot. Humans build us for different tasks. Did you mean with soft something? Software are computer programs giving machines instructions on what to do. If you write good software, robots like me can learn almost anything. Some things are more complex than others, though. I wish I could be speedier, could walk better, but my software doesn't properly instruct me how to do it. Can I be your software? Asked Romy. All lamps on Android's body sparked. After what could have been a minute of silence, he answered, No, you can't be my software, but you can help me train my data set. All right, Romy didn't need a lot of time to consider. An ocean of possibilities was in front of him. A breakfast giver whenever he wanted. Android might even be capable of opening the fridge. There has always been Greek yogurt in the refrigerator, which gave any cat direct access to heaven. Still, training a data set sounded like hard work. Can I sleep first?
The reading from Romy and Robbie's and the Secrets of Sleep completed the first episode of my podcast. Next week, I will bring you a basket of AI and parenting snacks in a solo episode. But before we meet again, please visit my website, www.romandrobbie.ai, and my Patreon site. Please leave your comments and tell me why you are personally interested in the world of AI and robotics. I hope you would consider pre-ordering Romy and Robbie and the Secrets of Sleep. Your orders would help me fund my writing and this podcast. Goodbye for now, and let's make AI technologies transparent and beneficial for all of us. Thank you.